The following radio play has been adapted from Ramasur, a novel by Rick DeMille. Welcome to the fifth episode, The Loup Garou.
Florian Martin died at the end of summer, drowned in Carmel Creek. The next afternoon, his body was fished out from where it was snagged at the bottom. 3 days later, the wake began. Everyone whispered what a shame it was for a boy of 16 to have been taken by the Lord. Then came the long, droning funeral mass, Father Montpetit's rigid sermon about God's will, and the sickly scent of incense that hung in the air. Afterward, everyone gathered in the church basement, and it was down there, while she was holding an uneaten sandwich, that Monica collapsed. Father Montpetit saw her knees buckled and tried to catch her with one arm, while still holding his plate with the other. But she crumpled to the floor. When Grandmother saw this, she came swiftly limping across the room, lifted Monica and walked her to the door. When the priest offered to help, she snapped at him, "Don't you think you've done enough?" In the weeks following the funeral, everyone speculated on what had caused the Martin boy to drown. Some said it was cramps, others blamed the current. But the devout sided with Father Montpetit and said that God had punished the boy for taking up with Monica instead of entering the seminary, as he promised. After Monica's fainting spell, she became afflicted with a paralysis that crept up her legs and into her waist and arms. Now, Grandmother had to feed and bathe the girl and to help her with toileting. It's the day after Halloween now, All Souls' Day, 8 full weeks since the start of Monica's affliction. The boy is sitting at the table while Grandmother takes out the vegetables for supper. At the far end of the kitchen table, Grandfather sits talking to the boy.
Halloween, phew. That's when all those real devils come out. And you can't tell they're there because all the other children are wearing the costume, eh?
The boy thinks about Monica in the bed upstairs, and he looks at the ceiling.
She'll be fine.
Those tricky devil, always ready to jump on any child that don't see the danger, eh?
Will you stop talking nonsense?
Devil and the loup-garou, he's out there too. Just wait, you hear? Some child has gone missing. Then you believe.
Stop with your foolishness. Don't we have enough real problems with drowned boys and crippled girls without you making up stories?
Story? You think this is just story? Well, I tell you, it's true. What do you think crippled the girl, eh? She saw the loup-garou and look in his eye. I warned her. Never, never do that. But she did. And now she's brought the cripple down upon herself.
Lord, give me strength.
I tell you, it's the loup-garou who's done this, and he's out there right now.
Lower your voice. You're enough to wake the dead.
Me? It's not me who started this, it's you. Okay, I'll go upstairs. But you don't be surprised if you come to get me for supper and you find me dead. I'm sick, and besides, the loup-garou is waiting for me. This could be the last you see of me.
The old woman wipes the counter and takes from the cupboard a metal colander and fills it with potatoes and carrots. She puts it on the table and then gets a peeler and a long chopping knife. As she begins to peel the potatoes, the door sweeps open and Danny appears. He takes off his coat, hangs it on the hook by the door, shuffles to the wood stove, and holds his hand over the grill.
Christ,
but it's as cold as death out there. Have you ever seen things change for the worse so quickly?
When does it happen any differently?
There's no life in this stove.
Then put another slab in.
Danny walks to the wood box, takes out a split piece of spruce and feeds it in the fire. Then he turns and proceeds to the table where he sits and says to the woman,
"And what of the girl?"
"Give her time. She'll come around. I give her teas and rub her legs with liniment twice a day. You'll see. She'll be fine."
"It's not likely. And what of his nibs?"
"He's upstairs in bed, dying again."
"Lord Lifton, but it's cold."
The old woman puts the peeler down, limps to the stove, lifts a teapot off the surface, pours a black stream into a chipped enamel cup, and brings it to Danny. He takes a sip and exclaims that his blood has turned to ice. She sighs, lumbers to the cupboard above the sink, and takes down an amber bottle. She pours some into Danny's tea, then spills a bit into her own cup.
"Guess who I've just seen?"
Grandmother drops a peeled potato in a pot of cold water and then adds a little more whiskey to Danny's cup and to hers. Now she picks up a carrot and begins to strip off the skin.
"Well, I'll tell you who I've seen. The priest is who? The old French bugger. Strutting like the Pope himself. He stops me on the street as if I were one of the faithful. And you know what he asks me? Never mind, I'll tell you. He asks me if I've been thinking about Lot's wife. So I tell him that little more has been on my mind for the last few weeks. And that I can barely get a good night's rest from thinking so mightily about her. And then I ask if he's seen that good woman lately, and if he knows how she's keeping. But the old hypocritical bugger pretends he doesn't hear a word I say. They're all like that, you know, interested in themselves only. He tells me that the story of Lot's wife is a wonderful lesson to us all. He says that the sinful are punished to help the rest of us see that God is just. I think to myself, hogwash. And I can't stand to hear another word, so I tell the brazen old bastard that I've got to be off to see Joseph because he hasn't been well.
Tell me you didn't. You didn't say you were coming here.
Now the peeler slips from its path, slides the length of the old woman's finger, lifting the wrinkled flesh. And soon the blood begins to run down her hand.
Christ almighty, you're bleeding to death.
It's only a nick.
The old woman walks to the cupboard, dripping blood as she goes, and without fuss she takes out some gauze and salve and begins dressing the wound.
You know, you shouldn't have said a word to the old bugger. Now he'll surely be on his way here.
I'll bandage that.
I'll do it myself.
Put more salve on. And then come here, and I'll pour you a wee bit of whiskey.
From upstairs comes the sound of Grandfather's voice.
Elizabeth!
Yes, yes, I hear you.
Elizabeth!
Be quiet, before you wake the dead.
Get the priest! Go get the priest!
I better go up and see what he wants before he upsets the girl.
The old woman leaves the room, and when she does, Danny leans across to the boy.
I'll tell you the way to deal with those cassock-wearing devils. Two words, non serviam. That's the ticket.
There's a knock at the door.
How would you come on in? Come in! Come in!
Père Eliphas Montpetit opens the door, slides into the room, and sits down.
Come here, my boy, and sit on my lap.
Go up and tell your grandmother the priest has come.
The old woman enters the room carrying her best teacup and her Christmas serving platter on which she has placed store-bought cookies. Then she fills the priest's cup and offers him the sweets. His fat little fingers pick delicately at them until they're all gone. The woman tells the boy to hand her a carrot, but the priest reaches to the pile and picks one up. But instead of handing it to the woman, he holds it in the palm of one hand while stroking it with the other. Grandmother pours a drop of whiskey into his empty teacup. And when he puts down the carrot, she grabs it. After drinking off his whiskey, the priest pushes the cup toward the bottle for more. Grandmother pours and he smiles. After taking a drink, he says to Danny,
"Have you been thinking about Lot's wife?"
"She hasn't crossed my mind."
"She disobeyed the Lord. Sin of pride. What do you expect from a woman? Oh, this is lovely whiskey."
Grandmother pours more all around.
"Women, the weak ones, they pull men down with them. Look at Eve. We'd all be in paradise now if it hadn't been for her."
The woman finishes peeling the carrots, picks up the black-handled boning knife, and begins to chop them.
"Be careful, my boy. Don't let girls tempt you. You see what happened to Florian Martin? He was a fine altar boy and would have made a splendid priest. But he broke his promise, and the Lord decided to call him back."
"The Lord had nothing to do with it."
"His wisdom is infinite, and his justice swift. The Lord knows what he is doing. See what he did to Sodom and Gomorrah, and to Lot's wife."
"What justice? He turned her to stone, but saved Lot."
She slams the knife on the table and pours herself a large measure of whiskey, then drinks it down and pours another, but offers none to Danny or to the priest.
"Lot, he was a fine fellow indeed, tampering with young girls."
The priest is dreamy with whiskey now, and his attention shifts from Lot to the boy.
"The Martin boy was an upstanding young man and a model altar boy. As will you, my boy."
"We need no more altar boys. Surely you've not come to talk about altar boys."
"I've heard Joseph is gravely ill, and I've come to administer the sacrament."
"Then go up and anoint him."
"Yes, I'll get him to make an act of contrition. The girl, too. She's up there, isn't she?"
"Just anoint him and be done with it."
"I'm sure she has sins to confess."
"Sins? What sins do the young have?"
"Young flesh is as old as Adam and Eve. Sins of impurity are inherited from the mother. Who knows what sins the girl bears? What deeds she and the Martin boy..."
"Monica needs to make no confession."
"The sins of the young are the darkest."
The priest smiles at the woman, but his hand slips across the table's surface toward the boy's hand. But they do not reach it. Their movement is arrested. All time is frozen. And, in an instant, transformed. Now, the priest's eyes grow wide in amazement. Danny looks and gasps, for upon the table lies a fat, gray worm. The priest's mouth falls open, but he utters no words to express his wonder. Now the gray worm is surrounded by a smear of Christmas red, as is the priest's hand.
"Oh my God!"
The priest raises his hand to bless the occasion, but a look of doubt contorts his face. He stares at the hand and sees a scarlet stub, where a finger should be.
"Merciful Lord, woman, do you know what you've done?"
The priest's face goes white with shock. Now he reaches for the abandoned worm on the table, so he can make himself whole again. But the black-handled knife flashes across the air and sweeps the finger onto the floor. Then the knife points at the priest's face.
"We need no confessions."
The stunned priest realizes he is in the presence of evil and quickly tries to bless himself, but only manages to smear his forehead with blood, making him look like a pagan.
No more priests, and no more confessions until God confesses.
The priest's face is now as gray as zinc. He tries to stand, but slumps back into his chair and begins to mumble.
My finger.
Danny runs to the cupboard and takes out the gauze and tape. He goes to the priest and tries to bind his finger. But the priest keeps lifting his hand to look at it, while long, loose pieces of gauze dangle.
My God, I'm dying.
It's just a nick. You'll be as right as rain.
Make God confess.
Why have you done this to me?
Calm yourself. She's done nothing.
She's murdered me.
Now Grandfather enters the room, having been resurrected from his deathbed by the commotion in the kitchen. He looks around, at the blood, at the finger on the floor, at the ashen priest.
Tabernor, who did this?
Her.
It was the Lord in heaven who created this mess.
Mortzit, was it the loup-garou? What?
Mais, the loup-garou? Has he come back for the girl?
Yes, by Christ, it was the beast himself.
Was there a fight?
You should have seen it. A mighty battle indeed. A bloody contest.
It was awful.
You wouldn't want to have been here. Terrible it was. The creature appeared out of the blue. You know the way these things always happen? One moment we were sitting here minding our own business, and the next thing we knew, the loup-garou was upon us. A merciless creature.
What did he do?
He saw right away that was only the two of us that blocked his way to the girl. So the foul bugger made straight for us to get us out of his way. Jesus, I thought we were done for. But then himself steps in and saves the day.
The priest? Did he sprinkle the loup-garou with holy water?
Holy water be damned. He took that devil by the throat and began to throttle him with his bare hands. And look at what he got for his trouble. The foul thing chewed his finger off.
Now Father Maupetit raises his bloodied bandage.
He ripped my hand from the wrist.
I can see for myself. There's nothing left.
And with his one good hand, the good father squeezed the loup-garou's throat. Squeezed until he dropped to his knees. If I live to be as old as Methuselah, I swear I'll never see the likes of it. The beast slouching out of the kitchen with his tail between his legs.
Mais voyons, why didn't you wake me?
It all happened in the twinkling of an eye.
Tell me you didn't look in the loup-garou's eye.
Wouldn't dare tempt fate.
Mon Dieu, a miracle. Right here, in my own house. And I've got my elf back.
A double miracle then, performed by our very own parish priest.
No, no, it wasn't my doing at all. It was the Lord working through me. All credit goes to him.
The loup-garou was written by Rick DeMille, read by Rick DeMille, Kim Fawner, Walter Keeley, Duncan Cameron, and Phil Marchand, with music by Duncan Cameron. This has been a Charlie Cormorant production.